Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you gotta do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. Hello, America, and welcome to the Friday edition of the John Solomon Reports podcast from Just the News, one day before the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks. We've got a special tomorrow. Don't forget this. I just want to shout this out before I tell you about today's show. Thanks to our friends at PolicyGenius.com, where you can save lots of money on your home and car insurance. If you just go to PolicyGenius.com right now, they're sponsoring a very big special for us tomorrow. We've got an incredible lineup. Former NYPD Commissioner Bernie Kerik, former Solicitor General Ted Olson, Frank Siller, the founder of Tunnel to Towers, former Congressman Lee Hamilton, the co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission, Jason Beardsley, one of the great advocates for veterans of the War on Terror, all here tomorrow to remind us that we will never forget 9/11, never forget 9/11. To do so, we must go back and relive and relearn what we can from that heinous day 20 years ago tomorrow. Please join me for that special. We'll be live at 8 a.m. tomorrow, right around the time that the first planes hit the towers in New York City. 2-hour special, great guests, a moment to reflect. I'm also going to share some of my personal recollections, things that happened to me that were going on that day that might be of interest to you. But really, the heroes tomorrow are Bernie Kerik, Ted Olson, Frank Siller, Lee Hamilton, Jason Beardsley. Tune in for a great special made possible by our good friends at Policy Genius. And if you want to say thank you for doing that, go to PolicyGenius.com right now, and they will help save you money on your home and car insurance. Why not do it? They save an average of $1,250 a year for the people that sign up. I want to save that amount of money. I'm signing up. You should sign up. You also not only save money, you're going to say thank you for making tomorrow special possible. Tune in here tomorrow. We don't normally broadcast on Saturday, but we will be tomorrow. A special, special day, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks. Now, today we got a great lineup. We're going to get right to it. We've got Congressman Andy Biggs, the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, the great congressman from Arizona. He's got a lot to say about Afghan vetting, national security posture on the eve of the 9/11 20th anniversary. He's up first. And then a man we're going to talk to from Great Britain, the former British commander of all forces in Afghanistan, Colonel Richard Kemp is here. Boy, I think he's got some sharp words for Joe Biden and what just happened in Afghanistan. You're not going to want to miss that interview as well. Andy Biggs, followed by Colonel Richard Kemp, up right after this commercial break. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest. Every time he comes on this show, we make news, we learn something. Joining us right now is the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, the great congressman from the great state of Arizona, Andy Biggs. Congressman, great to have you on.
Thanks, John. It's always good to be with you. Good to visit with you.
It is a pretty remarkable moment in our history. I mean, I was out just in everyday America last weekend, and people just they keep saying to me, I don't recognize the country, and what happened to America? Where's America? Bring it back. It's such an amazing moment. You've been a very vocal voice on the lack of security posture that the Biden administration has had. Even before we had the Afghan crisis, you were very worried about the border and pointing out the dangers, the lack of screening, the releases. Now you have the Afghan refugee crisis. Could you tell us how concerned you are with the way screening is going on?
I'm very concerned. The backstories I'm hearing is that there's really basically no vetting going on, regardless of what Secretary Blinken is saying. Well, he said they're doing biometrics and everything. Biometrics don't mean anything if you don't have a database to check them against. And we don't have any in-country database, really, that we can rely on for Afghanistan. So they ostensibly claim they're vetting. Now, the other aspect is, who's doing the vetting? And I've received firsthand reports that the people who are vetting are not qualified to do vetting either. Yeah. So it's really nerve-wracking. I mean, just the notion of the measles outbreak in Wisconsin, I know you talked about with Tom Tiffany, but
right.
When you see that, well, who's doing the vetting? And then the last thing, and Blinken refused to answer this question, was, well, what are you doing if you find somebody who is disqualified from coming into the country?
Yeah.
Who even your vetters think shouldn't be allowed in. And the last word I heard is, oh, we're trying to work with partners for these people. Well, nobody wants them,
yeah.
Basically.
So now we're stuck with them.
And they're we're stuck with them. So you're going to basically, what, you're going to open up Gitmo again? Is that the way it's going to be? We don't know what they're going to do. Too many unanswered questions for Anthony Blinken.
There was a moment in the past week where, after telling us time and time and again this was an organized process, Anthony Blinken said flatly, we're doing the vetting on the back end, meaning after the people have already left Afghanistan and they're either at one of our foreign facilities or they're already in the United States at a place like Fort McCoy or one of the other places where the intake centers are. Have you ever seen a moment in American history where the vetting of critical incoming people was occurring after they were in the country, after the risk has already arrived?
The closest that I've seen is the current open southern border.
Yeah. Great point.
Yeah. Closest I've seen is the lack of vetting going on down there. So it is ridiculous to think that if this were had been done in an organized fashion, in an organized manner, you wouldn't have given a whole country to the terrorist organization. And you would have been able to vet as you were bringing people in, because the only reason that these people didn't get vetted ostensibly is because we were trying to get everybody out within a matter of days.
Yeah.
Because we had lost control of the country. Well, when we gave up Bagram Air Base, that was the end, really.
It really was. A turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Every military strategist, every former 9/11 official that I've talked to has cited that as the most jaw-dropping moment in a long line of jaw-dropping moments. And it doesn't... It doesn't sit well with people. You had a tweet this morning that really caught my eye, because I'm seeing this, just as a reporter trying to neutrally observe this. But you wrote, Biden has no idea the fighting spirit he's awakened in the American people. These series of events, the Afghanistan crisis, challenging the Texas law, now the real sweeping COVID mandates that really impinge on American liberty, freedom, medical privacy. Is Joe Biden essentially handing the 2022 election to Republicans?
Well, I always hesitate to say yes, because there could be, let's put it this way, yes, unless there's some kind of intervening catastrophic event that he rises to the occasion of that unifies the country behind the administration, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yep.
You know, like the 9/11 event really unified the country for a period of time. And then, you know, it didn't last as long as we would have liked, but we were all together, you know, all together. And that's what it would take, because what he has done, he's had a precipitous drop. And all of these things are happening. You know, you've got Afghanistan. You have this, the in my opinion, the fascist mandates. All of those are happening in the milieu of a weak economy and inflation soaring. And what the Democrats want to do with the spending in the next couple of weeks is actually exacerbate inflation. So all of that is really helping draw down his numbers. And then you throw in the southern border, then you throw in the high crime rates in inner cities and the defund police movement and all of those things. And the CRT, which, by the way, is really
huge
driving
issue.
People crazy. Yeah, so these are huge issues, and these massive issues such as the Afghanistan, and then what I believe, I think what he's trying to do is distract from the Afghanistan moment, is to do the mandates here after he said he'd never do the mandates. So you really have a guy who is trying to tread water right now, and it's not working for him, and I would predict that he's going to continue to decline in his approval. He's almost down to Kamala Harris disapproval ratings, John.
That's pretty low from what we know.
That's pretty low.
I believe I read it was the lowest rating a vice president ever had. Even Spiro Agnew couldn't hit that back bottom. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Now, right after the president announced these mandates, including mandatory vaccinations for any employee of a company of 100 or more, you said you'd be introducing legislation to block, you know, this assault on American freedom and liberty. Do you think there are crossover votes? There are some Democrats who normally stay lockstep that'll say, listen, this is a bridge too far. We medical decisions should always remain between a person and their doctor. Do you think you can pull some crossover votes, Sis?
Well, if it were today, I would say no. I think as a critical mass of outrage grows, you're going to have people in these swing districts that Trump won or lost by 1 point, or Biden won by 1 point or something like that, where these Democrats are going to have to say, look, this is too much. And they have to join us in trying to block them. The question is, are any of those in position of leadership to advance that bill? And right now, no, because Pelosi has stacked all of her committee chairs are the most radical left senior members of the Democrats. And so, I mean, Carol Maloney's not going to hear that. Maxine Waters is not going to hear it. Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, none of those people would hear anything like that. Although I do think Schiff is beginning to wonder how far left you can go. But in any event,
that'll be saying something if Adam Schiff is thinking that way. You know, you've got people like Spanberger, though, that are in these really tough districts, right? Or Murphy down in Florida. Do they have to reassess whether they walk off this cliff with the rest of the Democrats?
They do. So far, Pelosi has made everybody walk the plank, right?
Yeah. She runs a disciplined ship. I have to give her credit.
Yeah. So the question is, do these people come? I mean, so you look at Gottheimer, the nine that held out recently on the spending bill. And the reality is, if you look at this $3.5 trillion bill coming up, my guess is you're going to find that they all got some special earmarks in there.
Yeah.
And so she had to buy him back. She actually was using a carrot and stick approach. She threatened him that she'd wreak havoc in the redistricting and also get him primaried, make sure that they got no money, dry up that money for campaigns. So she threatened him on that end. And on the other end, my guess is that when we fully get the bill, that you'll see that there's some earmarks in for these people.
Yeah, that's something we ought to be watching. That sounds like a good journalism exercise, too. Well, we had just the news. We'll get working on that. That's important. In the COVID restrictions, I want to ask you something that seems to be, and maybe I'm wrong, but as I look at it as a journalist, there seems to be this inherent conflict. And it all occurred in the same week, because in the same week that the Biden administration sued Texas, saying a woman has an absolute right to make decisions about what affects her body when it comes to abortion, they don't seem to have the same right when it comes to the inoculations and the COVID-19 inoculations. Do the Democrats have some sort of conflict or hypocrisy in that concept that you can tell a woman she absolutely has to get a vaccine or she loses her job, but we can't tell her that she can't have an abortion?
Yeah, it's hypocritical, but that's what we've seen. This is the path that they're on. And it's a path of, again, I hate to keep using the term, but I think it's where we are. It's a path of tyrants where they say, you know, this is what we want, so here's our justification. Who cares if the justification for what we want over here is exactly inconsistent and actually in opposition to the logic we used over here? So I even think their abortion logic is fallacious anyway, but
right.
But the nub of it is a woman gets to make all healthcare choices herself, but not over here. And, you know, their argument is, well, you know, but you can infect other people with COVID if you don't have vaccine. But oddly enough, with this vaccine, unique to all vaccines, quite frankly, you can infect other people if you've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
Because you're shedding. You're shedding.
Such an important point. Yeah. Even if you're protecting yourself, you may be spreading it to other people.
That's right. And these are inconsistent rationales for their positions. But that's become par for the course with our friends across the aisle.
Yeah, and perhaps a lot of my friends in the media, too, they don't recognize the contradictions they're allowing to flow through their own stories each day. You look out over, we're about to hit the 20th anniversary tomorrow of 9/11, a very solemn moment. How concerned are you about the security posture of the United States? I've heard some people in the last few days, including, you know, folks like Lee Hamilton, you know, great Democrat that people, you know, respect on both sides of the aisle, saying we may be less secure because of what happened in Afghanistan, because of the mindset we have right now, defunding police. How concerned are you about the security posture, and where are our weaknesses right now?
Well, they're myriad right now. One of the things you and I talked about earlier is vetting of these individuals coming in. We know that we actually stop some bad actors from getting in. But my guess is when you bring in 100,000 some odd, some people are going to get through.
Yep.
Because, like I said, we don't have the database. So I'm concerned about who are the malevolent actors from that group. I'm concerned about the cities and the defund police and the results of that, which, again, our friends don't understand the logic. You get rid of the police or even talk about it, they stand down, you got more crime. Chicago's a disaster. I look at the border, and John, I think 3 or 4 months ago when I got this briefing, we'd already apprehended more than two times the highest level ever of individuals on the terror watch list. And that was, I want to say, 3-4 months ago when I was down at the border, one of the times I was down at the border. And so our border is so porous and open. We had 2,500 come in over Labor Day weekend alone in Yuma sector. You've got places now in the remote areas of the Tucson sector where you're seeing 40, 50, 100 people show up, mostly
right.
Unaccompanied minors. And so we don't know who's coming in across the border. And this is just the homeland where we are, where we're vulnerable as well. You've got South Korea where we have 30,000 troops. They're vulnerable. Taiwan is now vulnerable to China because Xi Jinping has seen the weakness and the fecklessness of this administration. North Korea is starting up to renewing its nuclear program. Iran, it got all its money back. First, it got all the money that was created in by Obama. Now they got all their money back that was frozen under Trump. So they're flush with cash, and sitting right next door to Afghanistan, where we deposited and left all of that material. And no doubt some of it, well, I've actually seen reports that some of it has made its way into Iran already. So Iran is back up. So you have this instability in the region. And I think the Middle East, I think it's less stable, less safe, which means the rest of the world's less stable and less safe. Then you've got Russia parked on the Ukraine border, as you know.
Right.
And some of those don't have perhaps intense national security interest, but they do have a a cascading effect on the United States of America's security posture. So I'm very concerned.
Yeah, you know, we had a story on Just the News, I think on Tuesday, confirmed by the Homeland Security Department and CPB and others that a contractor, an Afghan national, who was a contractor for one of our agencies, was trying to get on a plane at Ramstein to come to the United States in Dulles. He was, through the screening process, an astute German military officer. By the way, not an American, a German military officer that was just helping out at the gate, noticed something unusual in his bag, and they opened it up. They discovered 5 blasting caps, a detonator wire, and a blasting tube. I actually have pictures of these devices now. You know, they pulled the guy off, finally off the flight, and they've now put him on a red flag list. They don't think it's terrorism because this guy did ordnance work, but just the idea that even anyone could walk on and that barely got noticed. Have we gotten too soft after 9/11? Have we lost some of our vigilance that we've had? I mean, that was a near miss. Even if the guy didn't have ill intent, having blasting caps on a plane is not a good scenario at 20 or 30,000 feet up above.
Right. No, you're exactly right. I mean, that's what I've been hearing, is that you get on these planes, the vetting's weak. Look, I can't even get through TSA with a bottle of water.
Right.
But somehow a guy's able to get there with blasting caps. You know, I mean, it is a real concern. And that's really what bothers me. But, John, while we're on 9/11, I don't think people realize that of the 22, you had people who had valid visas.
Right.
You had others who overstayed their visas, which, by the way, half the illegal aliens in this country have overstayed visas. Then you also had people who actually snuck across the southern border. I think it was 3 or 4 that came across the southern border. Now, John, where are we in trouble? We're in trouble because we have visa overstays that we never tracked down. And Secretary Mayorkas has told ICE to stand down. We're not going to enforce as much as we were. We're not vetting everybody that's coming into this country across the southern border. And then you also have a bunch of refugees coming in from a place that has been basically in civil war for probably my entire life.
You know?
So there's a lot of reasons to say we are now less safe because of Joe Biden and his policies.
It is in a remarkable moment. In my interview with Lee Hamilton, I'm doing a 9/11 special tomorrow, and Lee Hamilton diverted just for a second, but said something that I thought was really prescient. He's a Democrat, obviously, a Medal of Freedom winner, somebody that had a reputation of reaching across the aisle and trying to be common sense when it meant. And he said he had a word just chiding Biden in this current generation of Democrats, that you'll never create anything lasting, he said, if you don't get bipartisan buy-in, because what'll happen, the Republicans will come in, they'll reverse it, then you'll come in, you'll reverse it, and America will be running in place. Why do the Democrats, and do you share this, that the Democrats' inability to engage Republicans and find common ground is basically creating a situation where we just seesaw back and forth, we never make any progress?
Well, I think he's right. I mean, good policy is good policy regardless of who promulgates it. But, you know, one of the weird things about this, John, is January 6th had such a chilling effect.
It did.
And so people that I've been working with on legislation for several years basically quit talking to me.
Yeah.
I mean, literally quit talking to me. I'd say, hello,
amazing,
how you doing? They would not respond.
Oh, my gosh.
I had legislation that I had introduced when we were in the majority that the colleagues from the other side had signed on to. We couldn't get it through. Then they did it, so they got the majority, so I let them lead. They took my name off the legislation, didn't want me to be on, and other Republicans as well. And it's basically what has happened now is we are so divided, not just in Congress, but as a nation. You know, I do hope that maybe tomorrow people will reflect where you were on September 11th, 2001, and really remember the unity that we felt as a nation as we came together, realized we had been attacked by by outsiders.
Yeah.
And we needed to stand. I mean, because if we don't start pulling together on this stuff and recognizing and respecting rights, such as these COVID mandates are one more example of throwing gas on the device of fire. It's unbelievable, this incursion that we're seeing. And it's happened so fast, John, in these last 7 months or so. I don't know. And quite frankly, maybe we'll run in place for a while, until things cool down significantly. When they cool down again, then maybe we can get back to making the America that you and I know.
Yeah, you know, there's such a division. We're being divided by every possible way, whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated, you just go on and on. And a president who talked about not leaving people behind and uniting the country seems to have created greater divides in a very short period of time. I want to go to one other issue because it kind of comes out of CRT. It comes out of all these things. But over the last few days, myself and other reporters have noticed something that the National Archives and Records Administration did. All of the digital assets of the archives are now with a warning saying may contain harmful language. So when you open up the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or the Declaration of Independence, this warning says that there may be biased or harmful language in there, and it's part of a larger movement. There were documents released under FOIA that showed that the same National Archives employees, their Committee on Racism, wants to remove the name Charters of Freedom from the three founding documents in America: Declaration, Bill of Rights, Constitution. And then back in May, there was a meeting of that same racism committee that suggested that the rotunda in the National Archives was a form of structural racism. When you see America's historical preservation agency having these conversations, what comes to mind to you?
Well, what comes to my mind, frankly, is these people don't understand and appreciate history. There's no gratitude in them. Historically, John, where was the world in the late 1700s? I mean, when you look at it, where was the world and what was happening in the United States of America that was so unique that the rest of the world actually stood up and started watching, saying, what are they doing over there? And that failure to understand the milieu that we were in when we became, when the formation of this country occurred, and to see where we've moved and progressed since then, and this focus on is disturbing. But this focus on the problems, the imperfections of the individuals that wrote these wonderful documents, and maybe even some of their ideas, that's Marxist. Marxism actually is built on the old Hegelian idea of the dialectic. That's where Marxist was there. And so you're looking for the bad instead of looking for the good and being optimistic. And yeah, what it's damning the country. And so when you talk about the division, you know, that Lee Hamilton was talking about in Congress, that division is damning the country. When I say damning, I mean preventing us from getting the water, continue the water flowing of progress that will ensure freedom and carry us downstream in a free, prosperous society where everybody has a chance to fulfill the full measure of God's creation for them. I don't know what else to say. It's its most brutal form. It shows an incredible ignorance to where we were, the context of where we were, and as we move today. Which, by the way, speaking of cultural relativism, they're denying their own definitions of postmodern cultural relativism by this kind of censorship as well.
That's a great point. Again, another one of those hypocrisies and contradictions that we were just talking about. The standards for judging seem to shift daily like sand. It's really remarkable. Congressman, we are so grateful every time you come on this show. We always learn a lot. Any things, just as we head into the next couple of weeks, what are you looking for? Last question. What are you looking for as Congress gets back? What are the big moments that everyone should be prepared for over the next couple of weeks?
Well, there'll be stuff with regard to the administration and how Republicans respond to what's happened. That's one. Number two, I would say he's going to need to look at this budget and spending palooza that's coming out of the Democrats, which some nonpartisan watchdog groups are saying is actually going to spend $5 trillion instead of $3.5 trillion, or at least add that much to our national debt. So be watching for that. And then I guess the third thing is all the policies that are associated with this spending package that focus on expanding government, bringing power to D.C., and the Green New Deal, trying to implement the Green New Deal through the budget process, budget reconciliation process.
Yeah, those are big issues that are going to shape the future of America for sure. Sir, thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to getting you back on soon.
Yeah, John, always good to be with you, and thanks for all you do. I really, really appreciate it. You did a great job, and thank you.
You're very kind to say so. We appreciate all you do for our country as well.
Fantastic.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we've got one more interview before we wrap up the day. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain, and you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, the former commander of all British forces in Afghanistan, a true military hero and leader, globally recognized, Colonel Richard Kemp from the great country of Great Britain. Colonel Kemp, it is good to have you on the show.
It's great to be here, John, and I'm speaking to you from the United Kingdom at the moment. So great to be with you across the Atlantic.
Absolutely. We have such great reverence for our good friends in Great Britain, such a great ally and friend. Do you remember exactly where you were the moment those planes hit New York and Washington? What were you doing, and how did you ultimately come to be the commander of British forces in Afghanistan?
I do remember exactly where I was and what I was doing. I was in the United Kingdom, and at the time I was commanding a training organization which trained British forces for operations around the world. And I was training our parachute regiment prior to their deployment to Macedonia to deal with an insurgency, to help the Macedonians deal with an insurgency there. And all the paratroopers that were in training were watching, absolutely wide-eyed, were watching these huge screen televisions as the planes plowed into the tower. And I think we all knew at the time, as soon as it happened, really, we all knew that our lives as soldiers was probably about to be transformed. And before long, I was working for our cabinet officer, our prime minister, effectively, on international terrorism intelligence. And after that, I got sent out in 2003 in the early stages of the campaign to take command of British forces, a relatively small force at the time in Kabul.
Right. It's hard to believe it's been almost 20 years now when that war started. Bring us into those early days. What was the objective in Afghanistan, and how was the war going when you took over in those first few years, 2003, 2004?
Well, I think one thing a lot of people forget that, certainly I think a lot of people over here forget that, you know, that everyone recognizes 9/11 was the greatest terrorist atrocity that's ever occurred in the history of the world,
right,
killing huge numbers of Americans. But some people forget also that in the Twin Towers, more British citizens died than have died in any other terrorist attack in history as well.
Amazing. So, I didn't know that. Amazing.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's true. It's true. And therefore, you know, apart from our natural friendship and loyalty to the United States of America, you know, our two countries have very clearly fought together in pretty much every major conflict since the First World War.
Right.
So apart from that alliance that we've got and our relationship, the two country relationship, we also had a very big axe to grind in Afghanistan after 9/11. And the US-led invasion of Afghanistan after 9/11 and the subsequent operations there had one specific purpose and one purpose only. That was to get rid of Al-Qaeda and to get rid of the Taliban, and then to prevent Afghanistan again from becoming a safe haven for terrorism. That was what the objective was when we went in there, when we went in with the Americans and other allies. And that remained the objective throughout, despite a number of fairly pusillanimous politicians quite often changing the mission because it didn't really suit them. In some cases, it didn't really suit them to be, you know, fighting. They were more interested in humanitarian aid, so they kind of pretended the mission was that, or dealing with drugs. But it never changed from day one, and it was a success from day one. There was never another attack, a significant attack launched against the West from Afghanistan.
Yeah. Now, we really, people forget this, we really rooted Al-Qaeda out of there and took away all of its operational capabilities, which was an amazing moment. You made an allusion. I just want to ask about this as someone who was on the ground and gave so much of the effort. The nation-building part, the fact that our allies and the allied forces engaged in nation-building, that was a political exercise. How did the fighting men and women of Great Britain, America, the allied forces, how did they view that part of the mission?
Well, I think they saw it as being an important element of the mission, which in fact it was, because you know, the objective from fairly early on, and my forces were involved to an extent in this, our primary objective, because the Taliban had been swept away by the time I arrived there in 2003, Al-Qaeda had as well. Well, there was still some terrorist activity that we had to deal with from Al-Qaeda-linked organizations in 2003 in Kabul, alongside the Americans. We worked very closely with American forces in Kabul. You know, apart from physically directly acting to prevent terrorism in Afghanistan, carrying out attacks against the West, we had to build a capability there that would enable us to withdraw. And that capability was, of course, in theory at least, the Afghan National Security Forces.
Right.
And in order to maintain a security forces, there had to be a government, and therefore, you know, there had to be a viable nation. And I think those people work in the British and American forces who were there recognized the need to achieve that. Now, it wasn't achieved, as we've seen in the catastrophic events in the last few weeks, but certainly that was the objective. If we had just gone in, swept away what was there and gone out again, then there would have been a vacuum, which would have been immediately filled by the Taliban.
Yep. Or come right back. And we, you know, people forget this because, you know, history passes on and we get back to busy life. But we had a pretty remarkable, stable 16, 17, 18 years in Afghanistan where life was fairly normal. There were moments, there were green on blue attacks, there were a terror attack here and there. But the Afghan people began to experience a normalcy that they had never had in their, you know, certainly in modern history. What was it like? I've had the blessing of meeting so many Afghan expatriates who live here in the United States. I had my neighbor across the street who helped the CIA. He was a wonderful guy. I got to meet Sabre Rock, a famous interpreter that worked for the U.S. Marines and was wounded 18 times serving the United States and coalition forces. What was it like to meet the everyday Afghan villagers and people and residents of that country?
It was quite an experience. I mean, I had some experience in that part of the world, but not a great deal. You know, I think the thing that struck me above everything else right from the very beginning, and remember this is back in 2003, just, you know, a couple of years after less than 2 years after the operation began there. But there was a very strong sense of optimism among the people in Afghanistan. They were very, very pleased to see us. They were very grateful that we were there, that we'd freed them from the shackles and the horrors of the Taliban. And the only people I ever met who weren't pleased to see us were the terrorists we were dealing with. And it's not really surprising they wouldn't be very pleased to see us. Yes. But everyone else was. We shouldn't con ourselves to thinking that the average Afghan wanted the same way of life as we have in the West. You know, they're Muslims. They have their own culture. They have their own religion. They have their own religious beliefs. And they didn't want to be like us. But I think they certainly appreciated what we gave to them.
Yeah.
And what we did for them, because their life, you know, their life under the Taliban, as it is now again today, was hell then. And I heard all sorts of stories from these Afghans about in various different places about what it had been like living under that brutality and years of war, you know, involving the Russians, involving the Mujahideen and so on. And I think, you know, I think you couldn't find a starker contrast between the optimism and the gratitude, really, of the Afghan people that I met anyway, back in 2003, and then seeing images of Afghans clinging onto taxiing aircraft trying to take off and sometimes falling to their deaths. And it's such a, you know, it's such a huge contrast, and I believe a huge betrayal, not just of the Afghans, but of our own forces who sacrificed so much over there.
Yeah, man, I've talked to so many great veterans of the war who can't believe what's happened. I want to get into that now. You have been one of the most cogent voices internationally talking about just how consequential the Biden administration's exit from the country has been. And I wonder if you could walk us through what you saw. I mean, you're a strategist, you're a leader, you know exactly how to carry out an operation, and you did it with such incredible success. How did we get this exit so wrong? I mean, it seems like if you were going to do a how not to do this, you might do what we just did. How did we get it so wrong?
I think, you know, someone, a young man entering the U.S. Military Academy at West Point or the British Military Academy at Sandhurst would have learned how not to do this from day one. It's you know, the kind of lessons that seem to have been ignored
right
in getting out of Afghanistan are the kind of lessons a brand new officer cadet or second lieutenant should have ingrained in him early on. And one of the key ones there is you don't look at the best case scenario. You look at the worst or the most dangerous case and you plan and prepare for that.
Right.
It seems that both of our countries, Britain and the UK and the US, both the intelligence picture on how long the Afghan government would last, how long the Afghan security forces would last, was very clearly wrong. But intelligence, I've worked in intelligence world for many years. Intelligence is never an exact science. You have to assume the intelligence is telling you something, but you have to also look at what could go wrong. What is the worst case? And it seems that didn't happen, because if it had, then from the moment President Biden made his, what I consider to be an absolutely shocking, shameful decision to just get out of Afghanistan without any security concerns, from the moment he took that decision, we should have started moving the vulnerable people out of Afghanistan,
yeah.
the citizens of our country, the interpreters have helped us, etc. We should have got them out, aid workers, not get the military out first, then have to send them back in. It was just extraordinary. And that should have been done over a period of months rather than just in a panic over a period of a couple of weeks. And the actual execution of the withdrawal was done at the height of the Taliban fighting season, when they're at the most powerful. If it had waited for a few months into late autumn,
right?
or winter, then it would have been far less catastrophic. We probably wouldn't have seen anything like the suicide bomb attack we saw in Kabul airport, the rocket attack. We wouldn't have had not only the shame of leaving the country and leaving it to its own devices without good reason, but also being chased out under fire, which is the images that were put out across the media.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. I mean, there are decades of propaganda for the enemy now created by our exit. I want to ask you about Bagram. Of all the things that happened, I can't stop scratching my head over the decision to just, in the dead of night in July, 2 months before we're ready to really exit, we give back Bagram almost immediately. The prisoners, well, first it's overrun. Prisoners are let free, people that we spent 20 years capturing, the bad of the bad. And we have no exit strategy. We're using a commercial airport surrounded by mountains with enormous vulnerabilities when we had this incredible facility that was secure and central to American operations for two decades, British operations. Was there any common sense? Could you imagine any reason a military commander would say, hey, let's give that back now?
Well, it makes no sense. And I've heard, you know, many British and American military commanders question that decision.
Yep.
You know, I can't work out for the life of me why that base would have been given up when it was, unless you just believed everything was going to go swimmingly. It was going to go like clockwork. And, you know, effectively, I think the picture that was painted around that time was that, yeah, we're pulling out, but the government of Afghanistan will fight on, their forces will fight on, at least until the end of the year. That was the intelligence prediction here and in the United States.
Right.
And everything will be great. Everything will be rosy. And fine, give up Bagram. It doesn't matter. But that's just dreaming. It's not a strategy. It's a dream. It's kind of a fantasy, which did not happen and should not have been assumed to have happened. You needed to hold on to a base like Bagram, because even though it made sense to evacuate the majority of people from Kabul airport, it also made a great deal of sense to have a secondary airport you could evacuate from, which you might, you know, if you couldn't continue from Kabul or it became too dangerous, or in addition to Kabul. So you had the two options, and you had the ability to deliver, you know, close support from the air from Bagram to what was going on in Kabul. That wasn't available. I mean, you know, again, I go back to, if an officer cadet training at one of our military academies came up with a solution like that to a military problem, he probably wouldn't get out of the
academy. Yeah, you would have dismissed them, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Probably court-martialed.
Yeah, it is amazing. President Biden has made comments, as his team has. Listen, it was inevitably going to end this way, no matter what strategy we have. I want your reaction to that president and his team's claim that it was going to happen this way, no matter what plan we put into place. Do you believe that?
Absolutely, I do not believe that. It didn't need to happen like this. And, you know, they didn't believe it either. You know, I think he had hoped for a smooth withdrawal with no immediate consequences. Yes, there'd be consequences downstream, but that would be there'd be time to claim victory, as he has claimed victory. There'd be time to claim victory. There'd be time to sort of start garnering the votes that would flow from him ending this war.
Right.
And all the rest of it. That was his idea. But when this kind of fell about him, around his head, he immediately then started trying to blame everyone else for it. He blamed President Trump. And of course, you know, Trump had come up with this idea, which he'd been bound by. Of course he wasn't bound by. He is the most powerful man in the world. He's the president of the United States. He can do what he wants.
Exactly.
Not what President Trump wanted to do. And he spent most of his time trying to undo everything that Trump did during his tenure. So why wouldn't he undo this? It's nonsense. And then he's blamed the Afghan National Security Forces. He basically accused them of cowardice. These are people who have been fighting and dying alongside American soldiers, alongside British soldiers for years. They've lost 50,000 Afghan soldiers killed fighting the Taliban. These are not cowards. They're very brave fighters, but they had everything torn out from under their feet when he decided to pull out. He says he ended the war in Afghanistan. I heard a speech a few days back. The war in Afghanistan's ended. The war in Afghanistan is not ended. America's come out, Britain's come out, NATO's come out. It's still going on, and the place is even more dangerous today than it was when 9/11 was carried out. We face a greater threat of terrorism now in both our countries than we did back then.
It's unfathomable to think that, and to do it, you know, or to have it happen just a few days before the 20th anniversary of that horrible day on 9/11. What are the long-term consequences? I'm hearing, you know, we've had some American officials, now that we're out, we got a rosy assessment, now we're out, we're hearing, oh, well, you know, Al-Qaeda could reconstitute there. It'll be less than 2 years before an attack is launched from Afghanistan on American or Western interests. Do you share that there's a very bleak potential here that Afghanistan goes back to being the central operations of terrorism in the world again?
I'm very sure it will, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say it. I'm very sure that will happen. And again, Biden and our leaders over here both have come up with a kind of a narrative which I think seeks to reduce the damage that they have done to themselves, to their political reputations over Afghanistan. And that narrative is that we seem somehow to have handed over Afghanistan to the good terrorists. The Taliban are now the good terrorists. They're on the same side as we are against the Islamic State, which is far more dangerous. That's just rubbish.
Yep.
The Taliban and the Islamic State are not deadly enemies, as Biden and others claim. They sometimes kill each other. They sometimes hate each other. They sometimes cooperate together. That's the way of this part of the world. That's how it works. So they're not going to be fighting Islamic State on our behalf. They're not certainly not going to be fighting Al-Qaeda, who have a very close relationship with the Taliban now. And unlike back in 9/11, the Taliban are not just focused inwards on Afghanistan. They're also focused outwards against us. They've been fighting us for 20 years. They have some of their terrorists who have been guests in Guantanamo Bay
right.
and want revenge for that. So, you know, the combination of all that is deadly. And we will see jihadists flocking into Afghanistan as they did before 9/11, before 2001. They will flock there to train, to organize, to plan, and to launch attacks against the West. In addition, this victory for the Taliban, which is the greatest victory for jihadists, certainly since the Shia revolution in Iran in 2009, which created the Shia terrorist state in Iran, which exists still today, and at least the greatest victory since then, where we now have a Sunni terrorist state in Afghanistan. This great victory has inspired jihadists all around the world. They've been celebrating in Britain, they've been celebrating in the US, they've been celebrating in Israel. Jihadists everywhere have been celebrating this victory, and it will energize them. It will increase the number of recruits, it will increase their funding. And it will encourage them to carry out to carry out more and more attacks. And I think we will see a huge danger from that. Only today, the head of MI5, the British kind of equivalent to the FBI, he said that this is the effect of the pullout from Afghanistan.
Yeah, and our FBI director here, Chris Wray, made similar comments that terrorism is ahead, unfortunately. The war is not over. I want to just take a 30,000 step back. When history looks back at Joe Biden's execution of the last month, how will it rate what happened here? When we have a little bit more consequence from these decisions, how big a moment in history and how bad a moment in history was this exit?
This is the worst moment in history I can remember in my lifetime, and I'm a very old man now. But I would say, in a slightly more rational perspective, I think this is the greatest foreign policy and military disaster involving the West since the Second World War, at least since the Second World War. It's not something that's happened to us, like 9/11 happened to us,
right?
A terrible event. It happened. It couldn't be stopped. Maybe someone says it might have been, but it couldn't be stopped. This is something we did to ourselves. And I think the Biden presidency, and I would also extend the blame for this to British leaders and other NATO leaders, will be seen as, I think, a disaster because of this, just because of this one event. Other things that President Biden may or may not do, I'm not qualified to talk about, but this event, I think, will brand him one of the worst presidents the United States has ever had, because it is going to be a long-term strategic catastrophe, not just regarding terrorism, but the U.S. reputation and the reputation of NATO and the relationship between NATO and the U.S., Britain and the U.S., around the world has been severely undermined.
Yeah.
At a time when we need it most. We need to be strong and united more than any other time, with a huge threat from China, a further threat from Russia, and a very dangerous world. And we have made it, I would say, President Biden in particular, has made it a much, much more dangerous world even than it was before.
So many people I talked to today echo your words, sir. And I want to first thank you for taking time today to share your thoughts, but also for the extraordinary service you gave the entire globe, and particularly those of us here in the United States. We could not have had better allies or a better leader of allied troops than you and your great team. So on behalf of our grateful nation, thank you for all you did. I hope we can find a way to mitigate what is becoming, I think, one of the great global disasters of our lifetime. But we're grateful for your work, sir.
Thank you, John. And it's been a real pleasure to be with you. And I would like to also say how great respect I have for U.S. Armed Forces and their professionalism, their courage and their fighting spirit, who I've worked with side by side for many years, including in Afghanistan. They did a phenomenal job there. And I hope we, both of our countries and our armed forces can remain united and put together a strong front against this more dangerous situation now today.
Yes, absolutely. That has to be the mission going forward. So, sir, thank you again for your time, and God bless you for all you've done for our great country and this globe.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, folks, we're going to be back in a second to wrap things up. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon, Just the News family. All right, folks, welcome back. Wow, two great interviews. So much to think about from our good friend Andy Biggs, a congressman from Arizona, and Colonel Richard Kemp, a real military hero from our great allies in Great Britain. And we want to thank them. A lot to think about in what they said today. A lot to think about. And as though we don't have more to think about, tomorrow, the 20th anniversary of 9/11, tune in for a special edition of John Solomon Reports. It's called 9/11, Never Forget. It is brought to you by our good friends at PolicyGenius.com. We've got Bernie Carrick, Ted Olson, Frank Siller, Lee Hamilton, Jason Beardsley. What a lineup. All people who've had a critical, critical role on the day of 9/11 and the aftermath in the war on terror. Don't miss it. A two-hour special right here on John Solomon Reports and Just the News. God bless you. Good night. We'll be back tomorrow with that special. Please join me. It's a moment we can all spend together so that we never, never forget the sacrifices and the clarion call that 9/11/2001 brought to this great country of America. Until then, God bless you. And God bless this amazing country, the United States, as he always has. You've been listening to John Solomon Reports at justthenews.com. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code JustNews to save 10%. Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you gotta do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family.